So frequently when I'm trying to figure out what to talk about, I'll pick something that I've been thinking about myself and just, you know, think about it a little more. It's a good opportunity to do that. So what I've been thinking about over the last month or so and trying to notice and pay attention to is compulsion and addiction. And first, let me just define those words the way I've seen them. So compulsion, according to, and there's lots of definitions, an irresistible urge to behave in a certain way, especially against one's conscious will. Addiction, it's like the next, another level. Continued use of substance or behavior despite adverse consequences. In other words, it's harmful, but you can't stop. Now, before I do this, before we talk, I talk about this, I need to tell you that I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not an expert in any of these, which, you know, depending upon your point of view, means that I shouldn't be talking about it. But on another point of view, I don't know. Have any of you read Suzuki Roshi's book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind? One of the comments he makes is, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. Well, I'm a rote beginner, so there's a whole lot of possibilities. The other thing I want to say is, if somebody is truly, truly has some addiction or something that's bothering them, don't listen to what I'm saying tonight. Go get the kind of help that, you know, is available. What I want to do tonight is talk about noticing those things that happen from a mindfulness perspective. Because, you know, the people here that have come to this have been doing mindfulness. So you have some ability to pay attention to what's going on. And so, you know, you can take this mindfulness muscle that you've developed and put it in a lot of different places. One place you can put it is in noticing this type of behavior. For me, it's an interesting topic. It makes me curious. So how does this work? Well, I'm not sure that I know, but let's talk about it anyway. So, you know, we all need certain things. You know, we need them to get by in life. We find some things that we like. Our brain says, oh, I like this. I need this. Remember that. Remember where that came from. Because, you know, I'd like to do this again. And there's really no problem with that. This is satisfying. Remember where you found it. It's good. It helps us survive and thrive. Sometimes when you do remember that this satisfaction from some craving that, you know, you have come to like, there can become a restlessness in your, you know, if you don't quite have it yet, but you think you might be able to, can you notice the restlessness of maybe being able to get the thing that you like, a pulling toward it? One of the things that interests me is, you know, in doing this meditation and sometimes teaching it, one of the things we talk about is, you know, pushing things away that you don't like and pulling things toward you that you do like, which is what we tend to do. Well, I have found for myself and talking to students over the years that it's much easier to have things in your mind that you push away. I mean, pushing away, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, happens a lot. And the pulling it towards you that you like happens, but it seems to happen less frequently. So I was wondering about that. And so it's led me to think, well, sometimes you pull things toward you, you know, maybe even in an unhealthy way, perhaps. So sometimes in the process of finding good things that are good for us, the mechanism goes awry. Well, that felt good. Maybe more of it would be better. If one piece of chocolate is great, how about two? How about 12? How about a couple bars? You know, is there a point at which the reward you get from something good ceases to be a reward? You know, and you can see that yourself. I don't know. I'm in no way am I trying to tell anybody how they feel or how they react to whatever. But if you take your mindfulness and use it to look at this, you'll see for yourself. You know, the reward, certainly for most people, the reward diminishes as you have more of something. And at some point, even though it may have diminished completely, there's this thing in your head saying, well, more is going to be better. And check that out. Is that really true? May not be. Probably isn't in some cases. So this process can occur for many experiences, many substances. Our difficulty is that some things, some of these things that we crave that are necessary in some quantity are not good in some other quantity. So what I was hoping to encourage people to do tonight is think about one or two things. I mean, I'm not suggesting that any of you have this problem, but most people I know, even if they're not addicted, have some compulsion. There's something that you like, and you might think, gee, I like this. Gee, maybe I like this more than I even should. And so if you don't, well, then that's fine. But my experience is most people have at least something. So I'm going to read down a list of things and say a few things about some of them. And maybe you can think of one or two that would be interesting for you to think about and work on. Just be curious about. We're not really trying to solve anything. We're trying to be curious and learn about it. And sometimes if you just can see something, it improves the situation. Just that in itself. So this continuum of things that you can be drawn to goes from things that we definitely need to things that we definitely don't need, and all the way in the middle. So I sort of, not that this is a perfect continuum, but the first one that I found really interesting, in fact, this is one of the things that got me interested in this whole thing, is food. I mean, of course we have cravings for food. You have to have food. So why has it become a problem? You know, and I have friends who have had problems with food on both sides, you know, of having too much and having too little. And what's going on? And I don't know what's going on for them, but what I want to do is look into myself and see, okay, what's going on here? And so I started thinking, well, so there's been plenty of times when I think I've liked something and I probably have too much of it. And I started to think of the extreme situation. And for me, the extreme situation is Thanksgiving. You know, maybe some of you have another holiday where there's, you know, a lot of food and the food's good. So, you know, my mother was a good cook. We celebrated Thanksgiving, which is sort of normal in this country. And you know, so the food was really good. And you have a little bit more and that's good. And then you have a little bit more and that's good. And then you're kind of full. And so the reward to that last bit you had is not nearly as good as at the beginning. And then the desserts come out and you can't say no. So you have those, and some of the most food miserable times I've ever had is after Thanksgiving dinner. Because I just ate too much, you know, especially as a kid. As I've gotten older, I'm a little better. But so that's really interesting. Something that we absolutely have to have goes from getting a reward. The reward reduces. The reward reduces. Then eventually it's actually a problem, a pain. You're hurting yourself. And I've done that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one in here that's done that. So that's one that's interesting to me. What about movement, exercise, or just getting up? You know, all of us have probably been in class a lot. You're sitting in a chair, and you know, after about 45, 50 minutes or 75 minutes or however long the class is, you just want to get up. I mean, I was a student for a long time and I was a teacher for a long time. You can see that the students want to get up. I can't blame them. I used to want to get up too, but you know, the time's not up, over. So what about movement? Movement feels good. Exercise feels good. Has anybody ever exercised too much? you know, I don't know. When I first came to NIU, some of the guys I worked with said, "Hey, Alan, you want to join us? We're going to hike down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and back on Saturday, you know, on the same day." And, you know, I lived in Tucson at about 2,000 elevation, 2,000 feet, and this was 7,000, so I wasn't quite used to that. But I, you know, I was a runner. I was in pretty good shape. I'll do it. But I went down, came back up, and the next day I could hardly walk because I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't really prepared for what was there. Next time I did something like that, I got ready. But so exercise, which is a wonderful thing, I think it's some, I've read somewhere that said, if they could put a pill out that gave you everything exercise did, it would be the most popular pill in the world because it just helps you in so many ways. So next, sex. There's another thing. I mean, there's 8 billion people on this earth because people tend to want to do that. They want to have children. Is that ever a problem? Do people ever take it beyond what is perhaps good? I think so. What about TV and movies? I mean, if you go to a movie, if you go to the theater, you know, you buy a ticket, you see it, and then you leave. What about at home? You know, you turn on something that you like at Netflix and you're binge watching. Have you ever like, oh gosh, it's 12 o'clock or something. I think I've seen enough. So something that was really interesting becomes less interesting. Can you stop in the middle of activities, whatever activity it is, and try to notice the reward, the reduction in the reward? Can you just notice it for yourself? And everybody has a different thing that maybe grabs them. What about smartphones? Oh my goodness. I have one, but I was a teacher at NAU for a long time. And you know, when I first got here, nobody had a smartphone. And so that, you know, this class would be over, they'd get up and they'd talk to each other, walk out laughing, smiling. Now it's just looking at the phone, bumping into each other in the hallways. So I'm pretty sure smartphones can be addictions. Games on computers or your phone. I know people that play games well into the night to where it actually is disturbing their sleep. Now, according to the definition of addiction I read, doing something even when you know the consequences are bad. I mean, a silly thing like a game, there's some consequences. You're not getting enough sleep. Facebook, spending time on Facebook. Anybody ever spend too much time doing that? Gambling. So now we're getting into some worse stuff. You know, gambling can be fun. I've always liked playing cards. I played poker with friends of mine when I was a kid. And so there was conferences, and a lot of times conferences were in Las Vegas. I would go. I don't really like the slot machines or blackjack, but I liked sitting at the table and playing seven card stud. And then when that left, it became Texas Hold'em. It's fun. You know, you do it for a few hours and you go to sleep. There's people that spend the whole night there. There's people there that lose huge amounts of money. So it's not necessarily bad, but if you do too much of it, can you notice when it changes from being entertainment to being a compulsion? I think you can, you know, especially people here that are, you know, practicing mindfulness. Nicotine, cigarettes. Wow. I mean, I never had that problem, but that's supposedly a really tough one to get over. Alcohol. I haven't had that problem. I read a number of years ago, I read an article that said, in that year, and I don't know if it's still true, in that year, half of the traffic fatalities involve somebody drinking alcohol. And half of the divorces involve somebody having an alcohol problem. I mean, think of that pain. Actually, so one thing I'll share is, so I was married, my first wife, I was married for like 17 years. First 10 years were great. The last 7 years, she just slowly became a worse and worse and worse alcoholic. It was terrible for her. It wasn't good for me either, but you know, it was worse for her. I mean, it just watching that happen is heartbreaking. And so now we're it's not just necessarily psychological addiction, but there's physiological addiction. And can you feel that kick in if you're in these situations? That might be more difficult. And then there's various drugs. I mean, how many people have been addicted to and some even die from Oxycontin? You know, the drug they give you after surgeries. Now, I've had a number of surgeries. About 10 or 12 years ago, I had back surgery. And I just had trouble with my back. And I did physical therapy and I did everything I could and it wasn't helping. So I went and had back surgery. Now, when you wake up from back surgery, you hurt a lot. I've had enough other surgeries where, you know, a couple of days and you're fine. Back surgery, a couple of days and you're not fine. It takes a couple of months. So they know that. Surgeons know that. They give you, you know, heavy duty drugs. So I had like Oxycontin. They told me to take it every morning so that I would get up and walk and move and, you know, do the rehab stuff. Because if you're in too much pain, you can't even do the rehab. And so that took, I had surgery the end of July and I had to teach again in August. So I was, you know, it was fine. I was teaching, I was standing up and walking around. But, you know, I could tell that it could be a problem. After a couple of months, I just said to myself, you know, this is like something that's going to be hard to quit, hard to get off of. And so one weekend, I just said, okay, I'm quitting. So Friday morning, you know, I made it a long weekend. I just stopped and didn't have any. I was sick the whole weekend, really sick. I mean, I felt terrible. And then I never did it again. So, I mean, but I was lucky because I was able to do that. Some people, it doesn't work that way. So, and then, you know, heroin, fentanyl, I mean, those are, now we're at the far end of the spectrum. So can you think of any of the things I just mentioned? And there's others. No way is this a complete list. Is there something that grabs you that you can just be curious about and put your mind to trying to figure out, you know, can I notice the reward? Can I notice when the reward starts on the downslide? Can I notice when the reward becomes negative? And you know, you don't have to tell anybody about it, but what you do have to do is be honest with yourself. Sometimes that's the hardest thing, just being honest with yourself. Okay, yeah, this is getting me. So there, one of the sources, so when I started thinking about talking about this, I read some stuff but there was one website by Dr. Judd Brewer at Brown University. He's a psychiatrist and he's also a mindfulness teacher and he's a psychiatrist and he deals with addiction. So I really liked it. So Judd Brewer, if you're interested, and he has a website full of stuff, including meditations. You know, and he says, and I'm sure you know this, willpower is not always enough. You know, you muster up some willpower and sometimes that's helpful, but it's not always enough. What he ended up saying, and I think he has a pretty strong sense of mindfulness, he said, awareness trumps willpower. Or it can. Sorry for the word there. But never mind. The Trump word, awareness trump willpower. I wish there was another word that substitutes for that. So if you're aware, it's actually interesting. He said that there's a reward in curiosity and there is a reward in learning about stuff. And he said sometimes that reward can overpower the reward of what you're thinking you're going to get from whatever it is that you're compulsive about. Curiosity and just being knowing something and learning something about yourself is really fun. I mean, I think curiosity is fantastic. So, you know, I've been to some longer retreats and The retreats I went to were with Joseph Goldstein mostly early on. And Joseph Goldstein's a teacher of this stuff. He's been around quite a while. And, you know, after a couple of weeks, people are kind of walking around like, kind of like zombies, and they're looking down and they're kind of scowling. And he would frequently say, hey, this mindfulness is not about being grim. Be happy. He said, you should walk around with a half smile on your face. Just noticing what you're noticing without being grim. And I think sometimes when people get turned inward, the sort of grimness sort of takes over, but it doesn't have to. So just remind yourself, half smile. Okay, the other thing, so willpower doesn't always win, awareness can. And another thing is noticing triggers. And you know, this is very common in the addiction literature. If you're mindful, can you notice the trigger that makes you think about the thing that you're compulsive about? So first you have to be mindful, and then you have to notice the triggers. And then you have to, next time a trigger shows up, you have to say, oh, that's the trigger. The triggers can be a lot of things. It can be a person, a dog, a word, a sound, a song, a smell, a thought, a remembrance, anything. And it comes up and it makes you go towards that thing that you're wishing you didn't have a compulsion towards. So mindfulness really helps you notice the triggers. If you have a mindfulness muscle and that thing comes up and you're sort of on the lookout for it, you can notice it and you'll have better luck than somebody who doesn't. And advertising can, you know, can, depending upon what your thing is. I mean, they advertise alcohol, they advertise food, they advertise all kinds of stuff. There's a Seinfeld bit that I really like, which is closely related, but maybe not right on spot. But he said, are you ever just have some soda in your hand and you're watching TV, maybe a movie or a sports thing, and then this ad comes on for soda. And you know, there's you're at the beach and everybody's having fun, and they're playing volleyball and jet skis, and then you look and you say, I'm drinking the exact same thing that's in the ad. Says, you know, I must be putting too much ice in mine or something. So anyway, advertisements can get you. So the last point I want to make is this compulsion stuff is not a black box. You know, people think, you know, well, I don't know how it works. You can learn how it works. You can learn how it works by being mindful, at least somewhat. Maybe you won't understand it all. It's a conditioned behavior. And by being mindful, you can notice conditioned behavior. Look at the habit patterns. So make a game of it. I love to make games of stuff. Make a game of it. I mean, I know I'm not taking it lightly, but if you do take it kind of lightly, it might be more something you're willing to delve into. And you know, so my hope is that if there's one or two of these things that you might have identified, use your mindfulness to work on it. Some of you know, my favorite teacher is this guy, Nisargadatta Maharaj. And so there's two things I want to say. One of the things he says in the book, and he's not really a mindfulness guy, but half the stuff he says really is. He says, give up your addictions. There's nothing else to give up, which I found interesting. And then another thing that he said, so I'm going to read, to end, I'm going to read just a short bit from here. He says, your desires are there. Your longing to be happy is there. Why? Because you love yourself. By all means, love yourself wisely. What is wrong is to love yourself stupidly. He just comes right out and says it. So as to make yourself suffer. Love yourself wisely. Both indulgence and austerity have the same purpose in mind, to make you happy. Indulgence is the stupid way. Austerity is the wise way. Desire by itself is not wrong. It is life itself. the urge to grow in knowledge and experience. It's the choices you make that can be wrong. To imagine that some little thing, food, sex, power, gain, fame, will make you happy is to deceive yourself. Only something as vast and deep as your real self, with a capital R, can make you truly and lastingly happy. So working on these compulsions is not a side issue for spiritual growth. I think it can be a really helpful part of it. So thank you for listening, and good luck. So what we do next is sometimes there are announcements.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.